Ah, sure, it is raining cats and dogs outside. It's piddling down. It's Salford in the winter. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. It's 5 o'clock. How are you? Thank you for joining me. I'll be talking to you this evening. At least I hope I will be. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. I've got some interesting talking points for you today. It is the 10th of January 2023, your Richie Allen Show. And, well, it begins right now.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, like I said, I hope you will talk to me a bit later on. The contact details are pinned to the top of the page, comment live. If you go to richieallen.co.uk, you will see on the menu bar a tab labelled comment live. The contact details are there. But not to worry, I'll play the sting a few times between now and opening the telephone and the Skype. And I'm going to set the agenda, I think, today in terms of what we're going to talk about. Solutions, I think. Solutions, not New Year's resolutions, but solutions rather. Solutions, not New Year's resolutions. Solutions to the tyranny, to the agenda, to Agenda 2030, to the Great Reset. Solutions, solutions, solutions. All right?
It's your call. Skype. Chat with Richie. Or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Yes, but not now, not now, not until I tell you you can, until I give you permission to do so. It is best to use the Skype chat with Richie because it won't cost you anything, rather than phoning me if you are inclined to do that from overseas, where it can be very expensive. This fucking book. The coverage is relentless. It's torture. People went out to buy it at midnight this morning. You're supposed to say that. Midnight this morning, right? I don't know where they bought it. They must have bought it in train stations and airports. Not train stations, maybe airports, but they queued up to buy the bloody book at midnight. This is the book written by a ghostwriter on behalf of Harry, the Prince of Wales. No, he's not the Prince of Wales. He's the Duke of Sussex. That's right, the Duke. Spare, it's called. Jesus wept. Relentless coverage of, what has it been now? 2 weeks coverage since the Netflix documentary. Anyway, the only interesting element to it, and I have been reliably informed of this because there's not a snowball's chance in hell that I'll be reading it. I'm not even going to steal it from a torrent site. Why would I? No, but there is, I'm reliably informed, the only interesting element to it is his mum, his mother, Princess Diana, who died on August 31st, 1997. That's right, I had to think about that. That is the day that U2, Bonio, that's Bono, Bill Gates' best pal, and George Soros. Bono, Bonio, U2 played Lansdowne Road in Dublin on the Pop Mart tour. I know because I attended that gig. So I did with my brother. We attended that gig and we were raised from our beds very early in the morning to be told that Princess Diana had been killed in a car crash. Apparently he gets into this in the book, but in a half-hearted way. There's a bit of a half-hearted call for the investigation or for there to be a reopening of an investigation or the investigation into the circumstances surrounding her death. But a lot of venom is reserved for the paparazzi rather than the many anomalies around the death of Princess Diana. I mean, there were many, weren't there? Many weird and wonderful things happen, as is often the case when something like that goes down. All of those cameras on the motorway leading into the tunnel, all mysteriously out of action on the night in question. And that's just the beginning of it. So yeah, he gets into that, apparently, but only in a very half-hearted way. I had an email from the publisher. Incidentally, I did put in a request for an interview. I was given very short shrift. I was told that the Duke will be speaking to accredited publications only, not conspiracy nuts like you, Baldy. Fair enough. Did you see this today? Did you see it yesterday? The Irish Integration Minister. Yes, there is such a thing in Ireland. Yes, Ireland is admitting so many people now from foreign shores that it needs to have an integration minister tasked with integrating people. How do you go about that, I wonder? Answers on a postcard. How do you go about integrating people from, for example, from Africa, from sub-Saharan Africa, from Asia, from the Far East, from the Philippines? How do you go about integrating them into Ireland? Do you teach them Irish dancing? Do you? I don't know. Do you teach them Cúpla Focal? Cúpla Focal is Irish language for a few words. Do you teach them a few words? How do you integrate these people? I don't know. But Roderick O'Gorman has been talking to the Irish Examiner, and he has said that Ireland will need to rejig its immigration laws, its asylum laws. Now, he's a lying bastard, because Ireland doesn't have any immigration laws. It is told what it should do and what it must do by Brussels. That's how it works in Ireland, and it's how it's worked in Ireland for some time. Ireland doesn't make its own laws on anything. What will we do? What will we do? Well, I suppose we better ring Brussels and find out what we ought to do. That's exactly how it goes. Ring up Brussels and somebody answers, this is what you'll do. You'll just leave everybody in. Everybody. So Roderick O'Gorman has said Ireland will have to rejig its migrant laws, its asylum laws. Again, code for we will do what the European Union tells us to do. Why? Well, they've got to take climate change into account, you see, in the future, because people will be fleeing climate change.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yes, people will be fleeing climate change. Sea levels will rise to such an extent that people will not be able to leave their houses without being under 10, 15, 20 feet of water. They will then presumably get on a dinghy, a dodgy dinghy, and they will head for the nearest safe port, but they won't. They'll end up in England or in Ireland. That's how it's working out these days. Yeah, he's told the Examiner that people forced to leave their homes because of climate change will have to be included in the asylum process in the future. He said the climate crisis is creating an uncertain future for people in many parts of the world, with rising sea levels, increasing drought, soaring temperatures, all impacting communities. People will have to leave those conditions. They won't be able to live in those conditions. And Ireland and other countries will have to take in some climate refugees. Yes, he says, did O'Gorman, the integration minister, I'm really fascinated by this. What the brief is, how do you integrate people in Ireland? Do you get them to play a bit of hurling? Do you get them to play Gaelic football, camogie? I'm not joking when I ask, I'm genuinely interested, how do you integrate them? Traditionally in Ireland, the way they integrated asylum seekers was basically to give them whatever they wanted. But to put them at the top of things like housing lists and stuff, over and above the indigenous people. Yes, I sound very right-wing now, don't I? And I don't have a right-wing in my body. A right-wing bone in my body, even. No, of course I don't. But it's the truth. I've witnessed this over the years. That's what they've traditionally done. They've put the needs of people who have just gotten off a boat, proverbially, basically put their needs above the needs of the indigenous people. You've been waiting on the housing list for years, have you? You can't afford to buy your own home, no, like most people, no, you can't. Murphy, is that right, Murphy? And you've been on the list waiting for a house, a council house, or a local authority house, have you, Murphy? Yes, I have. I've been on the list for years. Well, you're just going to be bumped down the list another few places because we've taken 300 people in from Somalia. And they go to the top of the list. It's how it works. That's not conspiracy theory. It's not conjecture. It's fact. So I'd love to know what the integration minister does. How do you integrate people? I am guessing it's just as it always was. Give them whatever they need. Doesn't matter what the cost is. Is how it goes, I think. Yes. And climate change, I've been talking about this with my friends today. I don't have many friends. We've been talking about 2023 is going to be a big year for the climate agenda. At least I think it will. It will turn out to be. Why do you say that, Paulie? Well, because it's going to be everywhere. It's everywhere at the moment. Now, Sky News has spent the best part of a year looking into MPs' donations, money given by private individuals to members of Parliament to help them do their job, to get them elected, you know, to cover their expenses when they have to buy, I don't know, pens and bits of paper and leaflets and all sorts of stuff like that. And this is not new. I don't know what Sky News has even bothered wasting its time doing this for, but a lot of MPs, receiving 50,000, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 pounds 14 receiving more than £250,000 each towards their campaigns and their causes. This has been discovered by Sky News. And they've dropped a few politicians in it, and they've tried, Sky has tried to kind of find out who are these companies, who are these individuals who donate so much money to political parties, and what, if anything, do they get in return for their generosity? If you want to find out more about it, go to Sky News website, skynews.com. But it's kind of small beer in the grand scheme of things, in the opinion of this broadcaster. What is interesting, though, is the revelation that a guy called Dale Vince, who runs a company called Ecotricity, the Dale gave Sir, if you please, Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, gave him £20,000. Personally gave him 20 grand for his business, the business of being the leader of the Labour Party, but he also gave about £360,000 in total to the Labour Party in general. He gave 10 grand to the deputy leader of the Labour Party, Angela Rayner. You know Angela Rayner from Stockport? The Tories are all scum. You know Angela Rayner with the bover boots? You know her, the deputy leader of the Labour Party. So this guy is the chairman of Forest Green Rovers Football Club, and he's a big backer of Just Stop Oil. And we know all about Just Stop Oil, of course, the protesters who glued themselves to the roads and threw the soup over the Vincent van Gogh or Van Gogh painting because they want... They demand that no new oil or gas leases are signed by the government because oil and gas is killing the planet. So this guy, big backer of Just Stop Oil, big eco warrior, is giving lots of money to the Labour Party and to its leader and deputy leader. Now that's interesting because today, and this is very important news, Labour MPs signed up to a lobby group today. A lobby group that is determined that Keir Starmer will make climate change a key part of his election manifesto. Now, I don't know when the next election will take place. It's something I was wrong about because I'm wrong about lots of things. I did opine before Christmas that there might be a general election in the spring. It might still happen, of course, but I'm beginning to think I'm wrong. It might be a bit later. It doesn't matter. When it happens, Labour will form the next government. That is as clear as the nose at the end of my face. That's the way it's going to be, as far as I can tell, in any case. So, Labour MPs are joining lobby groups. These lobby groups want climate change to be a key part of Starmer's election manifesto. The Guardian, unsurprisingly, has been covering this extensively. And it argues that, it says even, that MPs are arguing the case with Starmer that the social justice case for climate and nature needs to be made more clearly by the Labour Party as, you know, part of its manifesto for the next general election. Now, this is the Labour Climate and Environment Forum, the LCEF, launched today, is signing up MPs, it's signing up Labour councillors and peers in the House of Lords. It argues that tackling the climate and environment emergency is an issue of social justice and economic prosperity that should sit comfortably at the heart of the movement as a core Labour value. Okay, this group is headed up by Paul McNamee, a former Labour policy advisor, and he is, hang on, let me tell you, let me scroll on down there. He's saying some very interesting things. It's Paul McNamee, who used to work for the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. This guy, he says, particularly in the climate movement, there is a recognition, he says, that the Conservative Environment Network exists and they've done an extremely good job at keeping net zero and climate at the head of government. But now it's time for the opposition party, the Labour Party, to do that very thing. He says, this guy, that climate and nature policies are actually extremely popular with the general public. It's not this kind of fringe issue that it was once viewed to be. He is arguing, and MPs are arguing, that climate impacts everything. It impacts housing, it impacts planning, it impacts transport, and every decision made by the incoming Labour government on planning, on housing and on transport must take climate change into account before anything is signed off. So this is going to be a huge year for the climate change agenda. How do we describe the climate change agenda? Well, it is the belief, I'm not sure it is a belief, it is the stated claim by environmentalists and by most politicians that we are on the verge of climate catastrophe if we do not prevent the world from warming beyond 1.5 degrees centigrade. It's nonsense, of course, it's pseudoscientific bollocks, you and I know this, but it is tyranny on steroids. And I'm going to leave that one there. We might get into that a little bit later on. Don't forget, I'll be taking your phone calls and your Skypes on the programme today. The details are on richieallen.co.uk, top of the page where it says comment live. But if you're too lazy...
It's your call. Skype. Chat with Richie. Or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Not just yet. So there you are. Yes, Labour MPs joining lobby groups, which are pressuring the Labour leader and deputy leader that they must put climate change at the heart of the party's manifesto as it goes into the next general election, whenever that happens to be. This is also very serious. Have a listen to BBC News this afternoon talking about excess death numbers. Yeah, this is very important. Excess death numbers. BBC News.
Now, a higher number than usual of people in the UK died last year. The figure of excess deaths is nearly 660,000. That is below peak COVID levels, but it's still 9% higher than the year before the pandemic. It's the largest level of excess deaths, or certainly one of the largest numbers of excess deaths, apart from COVID, in the last half a century. Just to explain what we mean by that term, excess deaths, it means those deaths above the five-year average. So it is a pretty significant number. Let's try and make sense of it with our head of statistics, Robert Cuff, who joins me. Talk us through some of the factors then, Robert, that may be behind this.
I'm all ears, right? 660,000. 660,000 more people died than ordinarily would have died in the last 12 months. Did you get that? That is an enormous number of people, isn't it? Okay, that's how you explain excess deaths, right? So you take the mean or the average number of people dying in any year, right? In any period of year, so any five-year period or 10-year period. Anything above that is categorised or classified as excess deaths. So 660,000 more people died than were expected to die. Holy God, right? Here's Robert Cuff, the statistics editor for BBC News.
Well, it's a combination of COVID, which hasn't gone away, and that's running into the pandemic hangover and the problems that we're seeing in Haiti, and it's starting to really come together in an unpleasant way in the most recent weeks especially. So, like, COVID hasn't gone away. Right? First, it probably was involved in about 30,000 deaths last year. Now, that's far lower than the pandemic.
Involved in, he said COVID was involved in around 30,000 deaths last year. Involved in.
But it's...
Let me explain that, because they are still counting COVID deaths. This way, very simply, if somebody dies within 30 days of testing positive for COVID-19, they are basically thrown into the numbers. They are chucked into the stats and they have qualified as a COVID death. So that is, again, pseudoscientific bollocks. It's very unlikely that 30,000 people died last year of COVID-19. But anyway, let's carry on.
Still running at a pretty high level, but it's only one of the many problems. That's what's different to the pandemic here, is when it was like the leading standout cause. In addition to that, we're seeing more heart deaths. Now, part of that is...
Hello, we're coming across more heart deaths, he says. Why?
It's COVID itself, if you've had...
COVID itself, he says. Very interesting this, especially at this particular point in history when doctors and scientists are coming out of the woodwork to say that the COVID vaccines are playing a pretty serious role in cardiac events that are leading to people dropping dead of all ages. So this is interesting.
More heart deaths. Now, part of that is COVID itself. If you've had an infection, you're at higher risk. after that.
That's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit that he can say that. A BBC statistics editor can make a claim as ludicrous as that, that if you have a respiratory illness, a very mild one, because COVID is a very, if whatever COVID is or whatever it isn't, let's pretend. I mean, I tend to work on the premise that it does exist or did exist, but it doesn't matter. But let's just pretend it does. Very mild thing. The average age of somebody dying with it, that's somebody who tested positive within 30 days of dying, about 82. COVID really didn't do an awful lot to most people. So it's monumental bollocks to claim that if you've had COVID, that you were more likely to suffer with heart failure or heart disease. This guy's a liar. Robert Cuff, Irish guy, working for the BBC. Let's hear a bit more.
Some of it is missed care during the pandemic, and I think we can show those numbers to the audience now. The number of people who came in to get start blood pressure during the pandemic. And you see that grey area in the air, that big drop in the middle of the screen. That's the first lockdown. And you can see the number of people who started treatment for blood pressure really fell away. And even if you come forward through to 2021, didn't really recover through the end of the year. Now, coming in for blood pressure treatment or lipid treatment, that may not be urgent care right now, but tens of thousands of people who are going untreated, that's building up heart trouble for the future. And so when you have these complex needs, plus people are dying of COVID, and you run that into the situation that we're seeing in accident and emergency now, that's a pretty unpleasant mixture.
Okay, he's got a point there, right? The NHS decided to... What did the NHS do? It stopped treating everything in 2020, and it became a COVID-only service. So he's got a bloody point there. We know that there are many people, I don't have any idea how many people, but I imagine it's a significant number, who are in serious trouble with their health, right? Heart issues, no doubt, right? Kidneys, diabetes, all manner of things that maybe could have been treated had they been caught early, but again, the NHS became a COVID-only service. So that definitely accounts for, no doubt, a lot of the excess deaths. We've got to acknowledge that. But not 660,000, surely.
A mixture.
Let's just focus on that last factor, accident and emergency, because the Royal College of Emergency Medicine the other day, they said there are something like 300 to 500 excess deaths a week happening because of the crisis in emergency care in the National Health Service. Now, I think the government said they didn't recognise those figures. This is quite a deeply political kind of issue. But it does this play into these levels of excess deaths that we're seeing?
The answer?
Absolutely. And going back to the definition you gave at the start, excess deaths, it's not that we're seeing 300 to 500 people dying on a trolley in A&E. We're just seeing more deaths as a result of the problems. Now, the figure, as you say, is contested, but it's probably not too controversial. There's a study back in about 2016 that looked at people who waited for more than, say, eight hours in A&E, and it looked at their risk of dying in the next 30 days. And so if you multiply that risk by the number of people who are going through very long trolley waits in hospital at the moment, that's how you get to this figure of the kind of couple of hundred a week. So it's contributing. It's probably not doing it all on its own. But the trouble is, you have a couple of hundred coming from that, you have a couple of hundred coming from COVID, you wrap them together, especially in winter, with that cold snap we saw in December, the arrival of flu as well. In the last few weeks of December, we weren't seeing 9% excess, we were seeing 20% excess mortality, so 20% higher levels of deaths than we'd expect to see. So this is getting pretty urgent now, and with all of these factors contributing, it's going to be a pretty hard one to grip.
You hear that?
In the last few weeks of December, we weren't seeing 9% excess. We were seeing 20% excess mortality. So 20% higher levels of deaths than we'd expect to see. So this is getting pretty urgent now.
That's massive, isn't it? 20%, not 9% in the last few weeks of December. 20% more death than you would expect to see. Why? Now, a private GP, a lady who's been in touch with me off and on for a few weeks and will be coming on this programme, is convinced that the current flu, God, how would you describe it? You wouldn't call it an epidemic because flu happens every winter, doesn't it? But it is being claimed by doctors, by some doctors, that the current flu strain is nasty. It's worse than you would have expected the flu to be previously. I know that officially they claimed that flu disappeared off the face of the earth last winter and the winter before because COVID dominated flu and all of that nonsense. And they said that by people working from home, by people social distancing, they said that flu basically disappeared. This is bollocks. You and I believe, I think, that flu and other respiratory ailments were effectively relabeled as COVID to suit the agenda, right? I would guess that's probably what happened. But some doctors are saying, taking all that into consideration, this is a pretty nasty flu. And some doctors, and they're saying this on social media, they're saying it elsewhere, these are real doctors. They're not conspiracy crackpots. Don't shout at me for using that term. This is a mainstream term that is used to discredit people. But these are mainstream doctors, and they believe the reason the flu seems to be very, very, very bad at the moment. No, they say it appears that the current flu strain is really, how would you describe it? It's nasty, right? It's nasty. And they're saying, some of these doctors, including a doctor I've been speaking with, that it's particularly bad in people who have been jabbed, whether they've been jabbed once or twice or three times. But that's an extraordinary thing to learn today. 660,000 more people died in the last year than would have been expected to die. And that's just in the United Kingdom. I don't have figures for other parts of the world, but I'd love to know those excess death numbers for the United States of America, for Europe. Shouldn't say Europe, should I really? I should say Holland, the Netherlands, Germany, Belgium, of course. I'd love those numbers because it could be millions. It could be tens of millions of people around the world who died, who ordinarily maybe would not have died. Tens of millions of deaths that we wouldn't ordinarily see. So what is killing those people? How do you break it down? I'd love to be able to break it down. How many of them were people who didn't have the proper exploratory procedures and whose cancers might have been treatable? How many people died of heart failure because they had heart disease, which wasn't detected? I'd love to separate those and see how many are left. What are you left with then? Because what you're left with, you've then got to talk about the COVID jabs, haven't you? It's 27 and a half minutes past the hour. I'll be back in a minute with a little bit of union talk because the UK government is determined to get a bill through Parliament which will guarantee minimum service from the emergency services during any industrial action. It's a big deal, this. We'll talk about it briefly in a moment, and then I'll be taking your telephone calls and your Skypes. It is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, and I'm Richie Allen. 28 minutes now, it is past the hour.
Hi there, it's Eamon here from Immunex 365, and I just want to give you a quick update for the new year. We are now in the depths of winter, and due to the lack of adequate sunlight, it is also the time when those of us living in the Northern Hemisphere have the lowest levels of vitamin D in our bodies. If there is ever a time to give your immune system a boost, it is probably now. Also, I'm really happy to be able to tell you that not only have we been able to substantially reduce the price of Immunex 365 since we launched in October last, but we can now supply directly to Ireland. For details of how each of the supplements in Immunex 365 are formulated to work together and protect you from colds, flu and other respiratory diseases this winter, just head over to immunex365.co.uk.
Uncensored, unfiltered, you're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
Yeah, and I will be taking your telephone and Skype shortly. The contact details are on richieallen.co.uk. Live comment, where it says comment live, top of the page, it is pinned there. And solutions, I've been thinking a lot about solutions. I get challenged a lot by people. Oh, you've got a lot to say, what about your solutions? And I think, you don't listen to me. Because I've been doing this particular programme since 2014, and at regular junctures, at regular intervals, I have suggested that the only way out of this tyranny is non-compliance on a big scale. I don't know how many times I've got to say that before it gets through certain skulls. I've given my tuppence worth on solutions over the years. I can't see any other way out of it. I don't agree with my learned friend Paul Craig Roberts, who I have undying admiration for. Dragging people out and hanging them. It's not going to happen. And that's some fucking way to start a new society, isn't it? Dragging people out and hanging them. Not exactly the kind of society I want to live in, personally. Somebody said to me today, "Oh, Richie, you complain about this and that, and you talk about self. You said that violence is only justifiable." And who talks like that? Nobody. People have been saying to me today on Twitter. You can see it if you go on there. They say, "Oh, Richie, you are the guy who says that violence is only justifiable in terms of self-defense." And of course, yes, that's what I believe. And then some idiot said to me, "But sure, they're trying to kill you, but they're not, though." But they're not, you see. You've got to be a bit more deep thinking, or more of a deep thinker than that. Yes, depopulation is an agenda. But me personally, I didn't take their jabs. I didn't wear a face mask. I went pretty much where I wanted to go during the lockdowns. Of course, I couldn't go to a concert. I couldn't go to a football match. I couldn't go to the pub. Fair enough. But I pretty much did what I wanted to do. So who would I attack? You know, my bodily integrity hasn't been threatened by anybody. I want you to think about that, because I see this all the time. Oh, they're coming for you, Richie. Well, maybe they will in the future come for all of us. Maybe in the future they'll come around to people's houses. Maybe. And escort or attempt to escort people to treatment centres. At that stage, yes, violence is certainly justifiable. But violence is not justifiable now, not from my point of view. Who would I be violent against and why? I didn't fall for the bollocks. I didn't. Neither did my missus. We have remained relatively unmolested throughout this last 2.5 years. Yes, we can see the tyranny of it, and we know where it's meant to go. And at some point in the future, as I've just said, somebody might come looking for you, looking for me. And at that stage, well, maybe all bets will be off, but maybe it won't matter when it gets to that. I want to talk about this when we chat on the phone. People have been saying to me, "Oh, start initiatives in your community." How do you do that? Please help me out. I'm not being sarcastic. How do you do that? Talk to your neighbours. About what? What do you talk to your neighbours about? Do you mean go door to door? The vast majority of people have been jabbed. The vast majority of them get their information from the BBC and Sky. The vast majority of them have no interest in listening to the guests who come on this radio programme. What do you do with them, your neighbours? I'm genuinely asking this. How would you go about it? Oh, leaflets, Richie. Bollocks. Bollocks to your leaflets. Bollocks to your leaflets. I get leaflets coming through my letterbox. I don't read them. I tear them up. They go in the recycling bin. How do you do it? Would you go door to door? Because this agenda is gathering speed year in, year out, isn't it? And it'll take several more big steps again this year. No doubt about that. So what do you do with people around you? How do you get them to, to even consider that this is even happening? Because the majority of them do not believe that this is happening, even though it's happening in front of their faces. So what do you do about it? Somebody said to me today, organise initiatives in your neighbourhood. What initiatives? With who? Exactly. I'm genuine. So I want your responses to this and anything else, I suppose, as well, when I open the Skype and telephone line pretty soon. Let's do this union story briefly so I can get off it. But it is important. It is important. Unions are criticising a new government bill which wants to enforce minimum service levels for the public sector during strikes. Unions are saying this is illegal, it's unworkable and it's undemocratic. So the government wants to make it so that some public sector workers have to work during a strike. They have no choice, right? The government is saying that this is to protect lives and to protect livelihoods. That's what the government is saying. It's saying, you know, people should expect to be able to get an ambulance. They should expect to be able to see a doctor if their life is in danger. And that striking and, you know, that when ambulance drivers, when nurses, when police, well, not police officers, but when fire officers, when they strike, this puts lives at risk. We can't have that. So you've got to have a minimum service, and we would have to enforce that. So a certain amount of people would not be allowed to strike, And if they did, they could lose their job. The unions are kicking off about it. Let's hear from the Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps. Here he is speaking about this in the House of Commons today.
A lack of timely cooperation from the ambulance unions meant employers could not reach agreement nationally for minimum safety levels during recent strikes, and health officials were left guessing at the likely minimum coverage, making contingency planning almost impossible and putting everyone's constituents' lives at risk. The ambulance strike plan for tomorrow still do not have minimum safety levels in place. And this will result in patchy emergency care for the British people, and this cannot continue. It's for the moment, for moments like this, that we're introducing legislation, focusing on blue light emergency services and delivering on our manifesto commitment to secure minimum service on the railways as well. So I'm introducing a bill that will give government the power to ensure that vital public services will have to maintain a basic function by delivering minimum safety levels, ensuring that lives and livelihoods are not lost.
And here's the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Angela Rayner, in response.
How he goes on with one breath thanking nurses to sacking nurses, Mr Speaker. Not just insulting, but utterly stupid. There's no common sense about this at all. He says he recognises pressures faced by key workers, but he knows the NHS cannot find the nurses that they need to work on the ward. He knows the trains don't run even on non-strike days, such as their shortage of staff. So how can he seriously think that sacking thousands of key workers won't just plunge our public services further into crisis?
Angela Rayner, the time is 23 and a half minutes to 6 o'clock. It is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, the 10th of January. I'm Richie Allen. It is great to be with you. I'll be taking your telephone calls and Skype calls soon. And just this tweet I put out today on this whole idea of what are we, you know, what are we doing? What are we going to do as this agenda becomes more and more, becomes more and more impactful on our lives? What are we going to do? What can we do about it? And I put this out today and it's gotten a bit of traction. That no amount of tweeting about how totalitarian things are is going to stop it. The Twitter, and by Twitter I mean social media, is virtual kettling. I've been saying this for years. If you've known me long enough, you will have heard me saying this many years ago. It suits the agenda to have everyone in the same place, sloganeering and clickbaiting about how rotten all of it is. Social media is inertia, not a popular opinion. I'll venture. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about the changes they plan to introduce? What are we going to do about the legislation they plan to bring in to, as they will put it, to offset catastrophic climate change? Laws and regulations that will make life increasingly oppressive for people like you and me. What are we going to do about it? Because going to stand in the park is not going to do anything about it. Gathering in large numbers in London is not going to do anything about it. And screaming about it on social media is not going to do anything about it. What are we going to do about it? Seriously. That's one of the questions I'd like to address this afternoon or this evening. So here are the contact details. Again, remember they are on the website under Comment Live. Come on then.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Yeah, and the kettling thing was a bit of a brainwave. I don't have too many of them. Several years ago, kettling is a tactic employed by police forces to control crowds. Not just people who are demonstrating or protesting, but even football crowds or anywhere that the police determine that there is a need to separate groups of people. And what they will do is they will surround a group of people and they will basically falsely imprison them. This is on the street now, or near a park, or in a town centre. The police will surround them and not let them out until they are good and ready to allow them to go about their daily business. It has been dubbed kettling. And it's my belief, and I've said this Not recently, but over the years, I've spoken about it, I've written about it, not that it matters what I speak about or write about, but if you're listening to the programme, you must think that I've got something to say. It is kettling. Social media is kettling. It's one of the greatest tools, one of the greatest inventions of those who run the agendas that we talk about on these programmes is social media. What an invention. Which resulted in millions of people abandoning their own websites and taking to Facebook and to Twitter, where I believe they are kettled, where everything they see is controlled, where who they speak with and the ideas they exchange are monitored to the nth degree. And ultimately you end up with a big echo chamber and you end up with inertia. So what are we going to do? If you're one of those who tweets at me to tell me, you know, start in your own community with your neighbours, talking about these agendas, explain to me if that's ever worked for you, because I can't see how that can work, really. I mean, the Mormons have tried this, the Church of Latter-day Saints and all of that. The Jehovah's Witnesses have tried it. Going door to door, a total stranger, knocking on a door and saying to people, do you know that there is a dystopian totalitarian agenda underway? You don't. Well, let me explain it to you. I see no other outcome there than the door being slammed in your face. Right? How do you go about it? Let me know. Or don't. It's up to you. One final time, the contact details.
It's your call. Skype. Chat with Richie. Or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
And don't bore me now. Be succinct. Be concise. You might be succinct yourself, Paulie. I hear you. I hear you. This is Jeff Lynn's ELO or ELO and Last Train to London. The time is 18 minutes to 6. We've got to just cut it off. We've got Jim in Indiana on the line. Howdy, Jim.
Hello, Richie. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you loud and clear. If my memory serves, we spoke in May or June last year, I reckon last summer. Welcome back, Jim. Happy New Year to you, pal. You're first in. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to share something that happened in history that led to totalitarian-type governments relinquishing hold on the citizenry that they governed over.
Go ahead, Jim. I'm all ears.
The Declaration of Independence was signed for us over in the United States. And in that, you read the solution to dealing with governments that will reduce you to absolute despotism.
Go on.
It's a shame that, you know, violence like that had to take place. But the British government decided that we needed to be disarmed over here back in those days. And about 3% of the citizenry of the colonies at that time refused to be disarmed and took up arms themselves to deal with the situation that was before them.
Do you believe, Jim, do you believe that's a viable option in dealing with tyranny in 2023?
I don't think it's been pushed to that point, but people should realize that once arms are taken away from them and they're left with their pitchforks and their hoes and rakes and shovels, that it's already gone by.
Can I play devil's advocate here? Because
sure.
I don't have your experience. I don't really understand a lot about guns. But haven't things changed an awful lot in the last 250 years? Like when the Declaration of Independence was signed, when you think about weaponry, you think about muskets and rifles and guns. I'm not saying that the weaponry was simple, but it was a lot more simple and basic than it is now. And when I hear And I have friends who agree with you. You know, they say you've got to arm yourself. You've got to prepare for it. And you might eventually have to go to war with these tyrants. But the problem is we're in 2023 and the weaponry they possess is unimaginable to me, Jim. And it's far more sophisticated than the weaponry that you could lay your hands on or I could lay my hands on. I just don't see... Again, it's kind of me being devil's advocate, but I kind of mean this as well. I don't see how we could be trained well enough or prepared well enough to be able to take them on, not at their own game. What do you say to that?
Well, of course, you probably heard that the Department of Homeland Security has labeled veterans, Christians, all kinds of people, and just about anybody that protests anything against the government as domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
And so you've got a wide range of veterans that make up that area that have been trained. You've also got those that are in the armed forces right now that have stated, and some of them have the feeling, whether they state it or not, that they're not going to come in against their own people. And so we've got to have a little bit of faith in that area for sure. Now, you're right in talking about things such as muskets and mortars and cannons and stuff that existed back then, as far as the revolutionary time. But, you know, the people had the same ability as the military back then.
Yeah.
And they had cannons and mortars and muskets too.
You're right. Farmers knew how to carry and how to handle a gun, didn't they? The farming man and his son maybe, and even his wife. But how many people, I know that the right to bear arms is very important in the constitution of your country. And I know that a lot of people do, private citizens do own guns. But just how proficient would they be? I know you've mentioned there are veterans. I know this. I know there are militia groups who I'm sure many of them mean well. But would that be enough, like, in terms of numbers? Because a lot of people will have a gun in the United States for home protection. But it's one thing to own a gun and to go to the firing range and to practice with it. It's another thing to be using that in combat situations, Jim. I'm not trying to be a big doubter, but I'm just... You know, I just can't see this. But ultimately, you believe that the time will come where people will need to make a choice, where they will have to, whether they like it or not. If they want to be free, they will have to fight for it. You believe that?
You mentioned it yourself.
Yeah.
If they come to take you off to some re-education center or rehabilitation center, whatever you'd like to call it.
Yeah.
Then all bets are off.
Absolutely. You know? And I would do my best, Jim, but I'm fairly limited in what I can do. I'm not action man over here. I'm not a trained martial artist or mixed martial artist. I'm just a big lump of an Irish guy. You know, you do your best, but ultimately you'd lose, wouldn't you? I mean, especially in this country where we don't have arms. We'll just be taken away and that's the end of it.
Yeah. There's a point there as far as your abilities to do anything without arms. You really slackened your choices there. You know what you can do is just like Australia. Australia used to be a arms bearing country, and now they've been pretty much shut down too. And, you know, it keeps falling country by country by country. If everybody gives up their arms, then they don't have any choice. It'll be just like the people during the Bolshevik Revolution that sat in their apartments and waited to come knock at their door.
Let's throw it out to the audience, Jim. I don't think we've ever really done this before, really. Will it come to violence? Do you agree with Jim? Get in touch via Skype or via the telephone line and let us know how that's going to work out. Do you agree with me? Do you think it's ultimately going to have to be non-violent civil disobedience? Jim, just before I say goodbye to you, for today and take other calls on. So and listen, feel free to, no pun intended, to shoot me down. You think I'm naive, guys like me, when we say non-violent, massive civil disobedience. You think I'm naive, do you?
No, sir, not at all. I think that that's the first step that has to be taken. And I think that's a step that will be taken, but that step will lead directly into what the steps are that follow with the people taking out their arms and defending themselves the best they can.
So the nonviolent disobedience will result in a brutal, oppressive put down by the state, and then people will have no choice but to fight back.
Well, that's the only thing I can figure out that would be the end of that, because they're already cracking down on people's ability to get out and do any kind of protesting. Except, unless you're burning down a city or something like that, that's okay.
And Jim, just briefly before I do move on, if you don't mind answering this, what do you possess then? What have you got? Have you got a rifle? Have you got a semi-automatic? What do you have?
Well, I've got all of the above. The thing being, I look at them as more of an investment, really. I'm 62 years old, pretty close to, not in the best shape to be leaving the cover of home and working at guerrilla warfare or anything. But the other thing that I would be fearful of is the people that believe that the police state is right, no matter what, you got to do what they say.
Yeah.
I'd be afraid of my own neighbor coming out and shooting me because I'm trying to defend my own property and people.
Well, well said, Jim, because I know that our listeners won't agree with me, but that's just the way it is. Fair enough. We can disagree. We can still get on. I said earlier that the great majority of people, in my experience, are on board with the agenda, not because they're traitors, but because they don't know any better. And you've raised a great point there. Are you contending solely with the jackboots of the tyrannical state, or do you also have to worry about your brainwashed neighbours who will come to the, assistance of the state? That's a good point, Jim. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll give you the final word, right? 30 seconds, then I'm going to move on. Brilliant first call. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, so I started to explain to you about where the Second Amendment came from. And so the Constitution was written, and then there was a group of people that were involved in the freedom of the very first U.S. experiment, I guess is what it's been labeled quite a bit. But they said, well, that's okay, but we need these 13 amendments, 10 original Bill of Rights, and the Second Amendment is derived specifically from the Declaration of Independence.
That idea that the citizens should be armed and well prepared in case they are confronted by a tyrannical government.
To overthrow government.
Them, yeah. Brilliant call, Jim. Thanks so much for that. Enjoy the rest of your day in Indiana. I'm going to take Steve on. Next, it's been a while since Steve was on the programme. It's coming up for 5 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to move these along very quickly, right, because I'm getting a lot of calls. It's the Richie Allen Show Tuesday's programme. Here's the contact details just in case you missed them.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Steve, welcome back. It's been a long time. You are a veteran now.
I am, yeah.
What do you make of what Jim said to me there, that it's going to come to it?
Sorry,
Go right ahead.
Okay, Richie. Sorry, I thought I got some feedback then from the other speaker.
No worries, Steve. I can hear you loud and clear, mate. So, what do you make of what Jim had to say then? Jim keeps semi-automatic weapons at home. He believes that regardless of whether you want to be peaceful, eventually it will come to your door, and you'll have to make a decision. And it's probably best if you've got a gun or two to hand. As a veteran, what do you say to that?
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't have those weapons here, obviously. But I do know that, you know, during the COVID era, there were so many people that were kind of, they actually thought that they were going to have, you know, police or military coming to the door. And I know a lot of people, that there are certain legal weapons in this country which are deadly. And I know a lot of people that have actually purchased those, Richie, you know.
Because they because they believe that the time would come when somebody would knock on your door and say, you've not had your jab, it's not acceptable, you've got to come with me. And you know people who are concerned about that, so they took steps.
They did, absolutely, Richie. And they said they're not getting through our door. You know, people thought, you know, we've seen what's happened with the injections and the people that have died. And, you know, the people that didn't want those injections, they knew, or they knew that they would, they could seriously harm them. So they said, they're not going to take me away. You know, they can harm me on the doorstep. I'll harm them before they come through the door. And, you know, there's more of us than there are of them. I know that you said that they've got all the weapons and the technology. I used to be a firefighter as well, Richie, and I was in the riots in Manchester, and I was driving my fire engine through Manchester, and the police couldn't do anything because they were overwhelmed with the number of people.
Are we talking about the incidents in Salford? So many years ago.
Of course. Yeah, I was actually there. You know, I got a brick thrown at the fire engine while I was driving it. It nearly came through the window. You know, I could have been seriously harmed. But I saw the police...
back away.
Say again, Richie.
Backed away. Our listeners won't have a clue unless they're from this area of what you are talking about. But this is very important. Do you want to tell this story? Why were people rioting in Greater Manchester at the time? Why were they? And what was the response when the police came in? Because I know this story. This is a good news story, really, on some levels.
The riots happened, was it 2013, if I remember? I can't remember the exact date. And I think it sprung up from a guy getting shot in London, and the riots started in London, and then they spread through the country. And there was literally, as I was going into work that night, Richie, I was seeing crowds of people walking towards Manchester, and I'd never seen that before. And we just knew something was going to happen. And as soon as we got on duty, we were sent out to the city centre. There was a fire on Market Street. We got called there, and then we got called to Salford. And literally, it was like a war zone. They were running pitched battles with the police. There were like petrol bombs. Like I say, somebody threw a brick at the fire engine, and it was so close to coming through the window. It hit like the upright, and that's what saved me, basically. But the police were pretty much helpless because there were too many people.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard so many stories about that particular time, and there are people in Salford who claim that the actions of the citizenry, the actions of the Salfordians, were justified because of the behaviour of the police. There are people who make that argument to this day, and they use that as an example of how you can put the run on the police, how you can, you know, how you can stand up against them, how you can take them on at their own game. But I wasn't here at the time, you see. A lot of this is anecdotal stuff. And what you can find online. But can we just go back to what Jim is saying then? So you've kind of told me like that you know of people who have stockpiled weapons that are legal. But what about yourself then, as a, you know, a former veteran, excuse me, as a former firefighter? Do you ultimately believe that it's going to come to that? Do you think it will come to it? Is it inevitable?
I don't know if it's inevitable. We can, at the moment, we're not at that stage. So if it gets ramped up, then we have to ramp up the defence as well. I mean, you know, it could get there, but at the moment we're at the stage where what can we do? We can stand at the side of the road with our yellow boards. Yeah. We can leaflet, and we've been doing those things for the last two and a half weeks.
On roundabouts. Yeah,
yeah, so, of course, Richie.
So, and listen, when I'm talking about protests and stuff, I'm not knocking people like you. I don't want to be misunderstood here. I think the Rebels on Roundabouts is a fantastic idea. you know, flashing in people's faces, but in a very non-invasive way, you know, showing them information. I think that's great. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. It's the going into Leicester Square and standing there. I think all of that, look, I understand it gives people some feeling of, you know, solidarity, and I can get that, but ultimately it doesn't do anything. What you're doing is actually proactive. So I want to get that out there. I do believe that. So when you say it hasn't got there yet, what do you mean, Steve? Like, what will it take for people to take to the streets in anger? Not to take to the streets with placards, but to take to the streets to take back their country. What will it take? Will it be mandated vaccines? Will it be an avalanche of death from the COVID jabs? What do we think will ultimately be the straw that breaks the camel's back?
I mean, it could be any of those things, Richie, but I think a lot of people don't really take action until it hits them in the pocket. So when people start to lose their livelihood, they can't feed themselves, they lose their businesses, that could be one of the triggers.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's happening, isn't it? I mean, I went to local supermarket today. I might as well say which one. It's Tesco. It's the biggest one, the nearest one to me. It's okay. It's absolutely biblical weather this morning. It was horrendous, right? The rain was so heavy, I could barely clear the windscreen as I was going down there. I mentioned to one of the supermarket, I mentioned to one of the checkout people, I said, look, it's quiet, like it must be the weather. And she said to me, no, it isn't. It's not the weather. It's quiet because everything is down. And this was pre-Christmas too. People don't have any money. I mean, they're struggling as it is. People are absolutely screwed to the wall as it is, right?
Yeah, well, maybe. But life seems to be going on as normal. There's maybe only a few people that are affected at the moment. But soon as, you know, they really can't feed the families, I really think that's going to be the trigger. But they're coming at us from all different angles as well. You know, they're trying to take away our right to travel, which is a big thing. There's a big thing in Oxford as well. And we were trying to raise awareness of that this weekend. And a lot of people don't know that how much their life is going to be restricted by basically the Davos agenda, which is being, you know, rolled upon us top down.
These are the traffic measures they're introducing in neighbourhoods in London. And proposals to make it basically illegal for people to drive down certain streets in their own neighbourhoods, effectively, which we've talked about on this programme. And you've been campaigning on this issue, have you?
Well, the great thing was we went down to Oxford this weekend, spent the night sleeping in a cold van. We got up Sunday morning and we met approximately 500 people from all across the country gathered in Oxford, because Oxford is the testing ground, and it was coordinated. There was a campaign. It's not our campaign. We just joined along with it. It was called notourfuture.org. There's a guy called David Fleming, and he's put a lot of work into this. And we basically got 50,000 leaflets through doors throughout Oxford, that was one day.
Brilliant. And this is where people are going to be affected by this. So you're basically informing them of what's happening and what they can do about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you said is right to an extent as well earlier. A lot of people just take those leaflets and they throw them away. But a certain percentage will read them, and then they'll go to somebody else, and then they will tell them. I mean, and that's the stage we're at. We're not at the stage where we've got to bear arms or do some kind of guerrilla tactic, kind of warfare stuff. We're not there yet. We're at the stage where we are raising awareness amongst the people what's going to happen. But the people aren't aware of it, and they're still calling us tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. You know, we get that. But when they realise that we're not giving up, you know, we've been doing this now for 2.5 years. They see us on the pissing down cold roundabout every Friday night.
Well, you're going to be still there. You're going to be a point of contact for people in the future when they do realise what's happening. They will remember people like you and the missus. They will remember you, won't they? Of course they will. When it finally dawns on them that this is wretched, this is absolutely dystopian, they will then begin to reach out to people like yourself that they've seen. And I tell you something else, 50,000 leaflets is a fantastic achievement. I mean, it really is.
That is really all credit to, well, to everybody that did it, but the mastermind behind it, a guy, and we've known him because, sorry, let me just backtrack a little bit, Richie. When you say that that all these rallies don't do nothing, they are a fantastic networking event. I've met so many people who have worked in different organizations. We've had weekends away in hotels where we've had a conference, a secret conference, if you like. Nobody knew what it was. And we've met all the leaders of all different organizations. Can you name them, Susie, with this? You'll name them.
Yeah, you've got Save Our Rights. You've got Lawyers for Liberty, UK Med Freedom, Heart, Pandata, World Freedom Alliance. We've been working in conjunction with, you know, a lot of these guys, people like Dan Astin Gregory,
Tess Laurie was there.
Just lots and lots of different groups of people that come up with different campaigns, and then we help each other out.
And I couldn't knock that, but I'm going to be the devil's advocate, whether you like it or not. I wouldn't knock that. The networking thing.
The other way,
even
Richard.
No, but seriously, like even the for those who don't network, for those who are sick to death of it, and it's disturbing them and scaring them, and it is that sense of camaraderie that I'm not alone. I get that too. The networking thing is obviously important. For me, the frustrating thing, and I've been doing programs like this now for well over 10 years, is that there's a massive opportunity when you've got 200,000 people in Leicester Square in London. And the opportunity, and I know this is absolute Hollywood thinking, this is ridiculous wishful thinking, right? But the opportunity is to walk through the gates of Downing Street and to tell them to get the fuck out of there. It's over now. Who's going to stop that 200, 250,000 people? That's the thing that frustrates me. I remember when I covered the Occupy movements years and years ago. And again, I took a bit of stick at the time because I didn't, you know, give material support to that. I covered it, but I didn't give material support because ultimately I believed that eventually they would go home. Whereas my wish for the Occupy movements, which I know now were funded by Soros and organisations like that, I know that now, but I didn't know that then. My hope was that they would not leave, that they would stay there, and that people would support them and come and join them and feed them. And that's all. When I give out about the protests in London, that's what I mean. It's, for me, it's like a missed opportunity. But I hear you, read the networking, and I hear you, read the, you know, meeting like-minded people and getting an energetic lift from it as well. So look, I'm not, you know, dyed in the wool black and white on that particular issue. I go to bed and I do dream of this, of them breaking down the gates of Downing Street, not hurting a hair on anybody's head, just telling them it's over now. Not just Downing Street, but the Houses of Parliament, the House of Lords, it's over now. Buckingham Palace.
Come back on that one, Richie.
Yeah, come back on it, and then I'll take some more calls. Come back.
Right, fantastic. Yeah, so we do go down to the London rallies as well as doing the Manchester ones. So a couple of occasions when we've been outside the gates of Downing Street, there's been a couple of significant events. One of them, the organiser said, right, bring your tennis balls. Okay, so they all brought the tennis balls and started launching them over 10 Downing Street. And like I said before, we're not there yet. We're not at the stage where people are going to bear arms. It was a peaceful protest, but we were stood there. Like I say, there were tens, if not hundreds of thousands of us, and people were throwing tennis balls over there. So that was kind of like, there you go, there's your warning.
So you're telling me, and there might be some merit in what you're saying, that if it did get bad enough, that the 150,000 or the 200,000 might then decide, right, we won't chant, we won't throw tennis balls, today we'll go through the gates. If it got bad enough, you think it could happen?
It's quite possible, yeah, at some point.
Yeah.
But it, as Steve said, it's, you know, we're not really at that stage where we want to be doing that. We want to try and do it by other means.
Yeah.
The first thing is we've got to gather as much support from the public as possible, and talking about what can we do at a local level, there are a lot of things going on locally, things like new health systems being put together for people to use. There's the Food and Farming Alliance, so people can get together and with local farmers and things. These groups are all already in place. They're already there for people to join in their local areas. There's pub gatherings where you can go and, you know, just get to meet people. This is what I've advocated for right from the beginning, is locally you need to find your local tribe. It's really important. And that goes for everybody.
Let me come back on that, Sue. Let me come back on that. And I'm going to give you the final word, and I've got to move on to be fair to other callers. Again, let me be the devil's advocate. Here's the danger. I can't find anything wrong with that. And I'll support it, and I'm happy to promote it on this programme. And I'm sure other content creators are delighted to promote it as well. I'm absolutely delighted to cover it. But the danger for me inherent in these movements is that they attract people who are clued into what's been happening and have been clued into it for many years, but they're not great. And I'm not talking about your own particular movement, which I think is doing a great job, but a lot of these other movements, these farming things, they're not exactly, you know, how do I say this, they're not attracting large numbers of people who didn't already understand that these agendas are in play. That's the point I'm making. There's a danger that ultimately, and it goes for this programme too, that ultimately we just end up preaching to the converted. I'm going to give you 60 seconds on that and then I'll move on. It's brilliant to speak to you again. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, great, Richie. Yeah, just what if people want to know what we got up to at the weekend, I've also kind of like tried to follow in your footsteps a bit and be a bit of an independent journalist. So I go out videoing people and filming the events, the rallies and stuff like that. And I've been busy putting a video together of the Oxford event. I don't know if you'll allow me to plug the channel.
Plug the bejesus out of it. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I've got a YouTube channel. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's easy to remember. It's called Thoughts from the Edge of the Matrix.
Thoughts from the Edge of the Matrix on YouTube.
Yeah, and you can get it also on Rumble and on BitChute as well, because I'm on a few strikes on YouTube for medical misinformation and stuff like that. I've done some interviews. There was some, like, Danny Rampling, the DJ. He's a freedom warrior now. I'm just putting a video together of his interview. The Freds were down there as well. I interviewed the Freds. That video is going up there too. So, yeah, I mean,
Thoughts from the Edge of the Matrix, YouTube.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to move on, Steve, because I've given you a lot of time now and I've got other callers trying to get through. Brilliant to speak to you. You too, Sue. Thanks for that. Thoughts from the Edge of the Matrix is the YouTube channel there. Rebels on Roundabout, Sue and Steve there. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, 13 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock. It is the 10th of January, 2023. Yeah. They gave it to me there, didn't they? About the protest rallies in London and elsewhere and why those are worthwhile and the value of those things. You've got to put these things in context. I've always put my side of that in context. I've always put, I think I've articulated my position quite well on that. Not knocking people who go to London or to Leeds or to Manchester and meet in large numbers and protest against what's been happening. I've never knocked it. I've said that it's not enough and that ultimately it's what people are expected to do, isn't it? It's what the establishment, whatever you want to call them, expects people to do. It expects them to turn up in large numbers to hear various speakers speak and tell them what they already know and then go home. And that's the thing that's frustrated me. Now, Steve made the point there, and Sue articulately, that they've found these events very helpful in terms of networking and meeting people and getting things done. And others have come on this programme, including Gareth Ike, said to me, Richie, it's very important from an energetic point of view. And I get that too. But I do dream of the day when they don't just stop in Leicester Square or in Piccadilly in Manchester, when they say, no, enough's enough now. We're going to put the run on these people once and for all, peacefully. I'm an idealist, maybe. Here are the contact details.
It's your call. Skype, chat with Richie, or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's +44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Yeah, got a pretty busy program tomorrow. Michael Rivero joins me live from, I think from Indiana, coincidentally. And I'll also be joined by an old pal, Dr. Jesse Keener, will be on the programme tomorrow. It's been quite a while. It's been over a year since I chatted with Jesse. So a busy programme tomorrow. Back to the calls. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, Martin.
Martin, how are you? Where are you, my friend?
Martin from Edinburgh, remember me.
I remember you well, Martin. How are you? What point would you like to make? I'm getting hammered with calls, Martin, so I'm going to move them along in as quick as I can without denying you too much time. What would you like to say, buddy?
No problem, Richie. I'm just glad you're back, and I'm glad your health's back, because I missed you for the last week and a half or whatever.
Thanks, mate. So I appreciate that. Go
Take
ahead.
Back.
So we're talking about violence then. We're talking about taking up arms, and we're talking about an eventuality where this will come to our doorsteps, and there won't be any talk then of peacefully disobeying, that people will have to take up. They will have to act, and they will have to act physically. What do you think, Martin?
Well, I agree. I mean, there's no point in violence. It doesn't work. You can't fight these people. The police and the military are far too powerful, so there's no point. So it has to be disobedience and just saying no to their laws and nonsense. Yeah, so I agree with all that.
In enough numbers. But it's going to take an enormous amount of people to come together, not to come together, but to decide enough is enough, we're not obeying, we're not complying.
Well, exactly. But I mean, it's shows like yours and Max Egan and all the other people that actually get that message out. So without you and people like Max, and the message isn't going to get out, because you're not going to get on the mainstream.
But don't we ultimately end up providing, whether we like it or not, don't we end up providing a service for people who more often than not are already alive to the agendas that are in play, and that no matter how much I might fancy the Richie Allen radio show and how much pride I might take in producing it, ultimately all it does is speak to people who already know this stuff is happening, Martin. Isn't that the
danger?
Well,
yeah, you might be talking to the converted, but a lot. But there'll still be new listeners all the time, because I always say share your program out, and so hopefully get more listeners that way. But and that's what you're supposed to do anyway on these platforms.
Yeah,
share it out, and get other people to listen to it, like my daughter, my son, my ex-wife, my partner. They all listen to it. So
you've gotten them listening to it. At some point, then you hope. That you hope, I'm speaking about you now, that enough people will not just become aware of it, but become aware of how dangerous and how urgent it is, that they will reject it, however that looks, you know, in terms of we won't continue to get vaccines, we won't allow a social credit system come in, we won't participate in that, we say no. That's ultimately your hope.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try and tell people, but it is hard, though, because some people just don't accept it, that kind of view. But I try my best, and so do my friends. And, you know, you've got to try your best, because it's very hard to get through to the NPCs, as they call them.
Well, it is. I mean, it occurred to me today, I've been doing this program for 8 years. It's got a very healthy listenership here in the UK and in Ireland and also in the States. But ultimately, the truth is, Martin, very few people in my community have got any idea as to what it is that I do. They would never have heard of the programme. And that's... there's no vanity in play here. It's not so much a concern, but it's also a reality check for me.
I know.
That the majority of people around me are completely unaware, or at least they seem to be unaware, that there is a dystopian, totalitarian, depopulation agenda in play. And I mentioned earlier on this idea that people have of, you know, going door to door, speaking to your neighbours. I've had no success in the last 2.5 years speaking to my neighbours about these agendas, and my approach is as mild-mannered and as almost, as I said yesterday, submissive as it gets. I just get the glassy-eyed stare, Martin. That guy's mad.
Yeah, well, my approach is to share your programme or other platforms' programmes to friends that are still not woken up, and just share it and just say, listen to this, just listen. And that's my approach, because I don't do face-to-face things, because doesn't work. But if they see the program or listen to the program or watch a video or whatever, then it gets through to them a little bit more.
Well, let me ask you this then on that, and then I know I gave loads of time to Steve, but I do want to move on. I've got to ask you this then, because I don't know the answer to this. I suspect it's going to be a long time, but I hope I'm wrong. Are you optimistic that there is a brighter future? Are you optimistic that there will be a time when none of this will be with us, that there will be a time when people are not enduring this sort of
oppressiveness?
I
think people are going to eventually wake up, because it's getting so ridiculous that people are eventually going to wake up, hopefully, consciously. So I'm a bit optimistic. The reason I was phoning for anyway was not just to say I was happy your health's back and you're back online, was because if you remember our last phone call before the new year, before Christmas, I was talking about flat earth. Remember that?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Well, it was your call that prompted me to give David Weiss a ring.
Yeah, well, David Weiss is not the right person to get on.
You see, I kind of had an idea you might say that. You see, you can't win with some people. You can't win with some people. So David Weiss came on. He's pretty well known in flat earth circles. He didn't do a great job. But it's my fault because I got the wrong guy on. Come on, Martin.
Yeah,
I'm joking, by the way.
You promised me, you semi-promised me, should I say, not promised me, you semi-promised me that you would get Eric Dubé on in the new year.
Yeah, I've reached out to that chap, not for the first time, and never had a response from him. This is, I suppose, the doyen of flat earth belief. Yeah. But what I'd like
That's
to do, Martin, what I'd like to do, because I don't have the scientific knowledge, what I'd like to do is set up a genuinely reasonable and, you know, courteous debate between somebody who doesn't believe the earth is flat and somebody like Eric Dubé, where we could do it. Because I'm the wrong guy to talk to these people anyway.
Yeah, David Weiss was not the right person to get on your show. I do like David Weiss, but he's talked too fast, and he's not really eloquent enough, and he doesn't really know as much as Eric Dubé. Eric Dubé is a godfather.
That isn't my problem, you see. That's not my problem. If I bring a guy on and he's well known and he's got a big following and he doesn't do very well, that's not my problem. He didn't answer the questions I put to him very well at all. Look, all I can tell you, Martin, is, and I've got to move on, is hang on. I will extend another invitation to Eric Dubé, but the caveat will be, it will have to be a debate with somebody who comes from an academic background, who can take that on, because that will be far more interesting than me
of
doing
course.
It. If I can set it up, I'll set it up and I'll do it.
That's what we talked about in the first call. But what happens is, Eric Dubé's tried to have debates with astrophysicists and Neil deGrasse Tyson from America, Brian Cox from England, and nobody will come on and debate him. For some reason, he's never been able to debate anybody. So if you can get somebody on to debate him,
I'm sure we can find somebody. Look, we'll look into it. Martin, thanks for getting back in touch. I really appreciate that. Martin in Edinburgh there. Yeah. Got the wrong guy on. I mean, I was very polite with David. I think David is probably a half-decent bloke, but no, he didn't do a very good job on behalf of the flat earth community, if such a thing exists. Is there such a thing as the flat earth community? It's all about communities these days. Here are the contact details, and then I'm going to take a tune so I can have a wee breather. But before I do that, it is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. The time is now 26 minutes past the hour.
Hi there. It's Eamon here from Immunex 365, and I just want to give you a quick update for the new year. We are now in the depths of winter, and due to the lack of adequate sunlight, it is also the time when those of us living in the Northern Hemisphere have the lowest levels of vitamin D in our bodies. If there is ever a time to give your immune system a boost, it is probably now. Also, I'm really happy to be able to tell you that not only have we been able to substantially reduce the price of Immunex 365 since we launched in October last, but we can now supply directly to Ireland. For details of how each of the supplements in Immunex 365 are formulated to work together and protect you from colds, flu and other respiratory diseases this winter, just head over to immunex365.co.uk.
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
Yes, okay, I won't take any music for the time being. Back to the telephone line I go. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hello, this is Jason.
Did you say Jackson?
Jason.
Oh, Jason. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the programme, mate. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the West Midlands, Richie.
Nice to hear from you, pal, from the West Midlands. Good on you, Jason. Thanks for getting in touch, my friend. What would you like to say?
Well, I've been living in Thailand for the last 7 years, Richie, and I've just come back to all this chaos because my mother's been taken ill after the vaccine.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jason. You've been in Thailand for years and you've only come home because your mum has fallen ill. Tell us more about that. When, which vaccine, I don't mean which manufacturer, but was it the second jab, the third jab?
She had two jabs of the AZ when everybody else was getting it, Richie, and not long after, she was taken down with a heart attack.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was caused by a blood clot.
And how is she now, Jason?
Well, it's really knocked her about, Richie. It's caused a lot of other problems as well.
I'm really sorry to hear that, genuinely. And do her doctors accept that the jabs have played a part in the heart attack?
Not really, Richie. Not really.
So they said the heart attack was due to a clot. She had two AstraZeneca jabs. The AstraZeneca jabs are not being used in the UK anymore because there are concerns about blood clotting, ironically.
Yes.
And yet the doctors are refusing to acknowledge that the jabs might have played a part.
I don't think she's actually tackled them about it, but she's 75 now, Richie, so, you know. And she's worked in the National Health Service for most of her life up until she retired. And she, you know, these people, they give all their life and heart and soul to the National Health Service and they think it's everything.
And she would have had no reason to doubt those people who said take the vaccine.
No.
This is the thing, isn't it? Why would she doubt them? So many people like your mum. Why would you doubt them? They're there to look after us. So, yep, I'll take the jab. Wow. And Jason, you sound pretty worried about her. You said, I don't want to be too personal, but you said that the heart attack has led to other problems.
Well, yeah, she's come up with stomach problems now and some sort of stones in her bile ducts, which she's going to have a procedure for. But whether this was caused by obviously the intervention or not, I do not know.
Do you think she'll take another COVID shot, Jason, or will she, has she decided not to?
No.
She won't?
No, she's at the minute now, she won't do it no more.
Thank God for that, because, you know, a lot of doctors who are speaking out about these jabs, they believe that there's always time to stop, really. You know, some people are really worried about, if I've had one or if I've had two, it might be, you know, the damage might be irreparable. But a lot of doctors are saying, no, not necessarily. There is time to stop. So it might be in the nick of time, maybe, Jason.
Maybe for some people. I know people on the fifth or sixth.
Fifth or sixth jab. That's astonishing, isn't it?
I mean, when I left Thailand had a completely different way of dealing with the COVID situation than what the UK did.
Tell us about that. What was it? What was it like in Thailand back in March 2020?
Richie, they locked all the borders down. There was nobody in or out of Thailand. Everything was locked down, and it was all done in a regimental way. And if anybody was repatriated into the country in that time, they went through strict testing, and if they got COVID, they was put into a quarantine camp and kept away from all the main hospitals, so that there was no way that they could have passed it on to anybody in society. It was a really good way of doing things they did over there.
So they basically locked all the borders down, stopped people coming in and people going out. But then within Thailand, were people pretty much free to go about their business and work and stuff like that?
We had some restrictions. They closed like county to county crossings over. Bars and restaurants was closed down, and everybody was made to wear masks. But the major businesses like Macro and like large supermarkets, as long as you wore a mask, you could go in them and do your business freely.
And did you wear a mask? Because I never wore a mask because I don't believe in these restrictions, and I didn't believe that the masks could really stop, you know, the particles of any virus. Did you, I'm not having a go at you now, I'm not putting it up to you, but did you wear a mask when you went into the supermarkets?
Well, I went into a local shop called 7-Eleven the one day without wearing my mask. And the guy behind the till, he served me okay. But I could see the look of fear and dread on his face about serving a person without a mask on. So I thought, well,
fair enough.
I don't want to make people feel like that. So
yeah, I understand that.
Follow the rules and do what everybody else is doing.
And you know,
went along with it like that.
Fair enough, Jason. And it's worth mentioning that before COVID entered our lives, in that part of the world, I'm not sure about Thailand, but we know in Japan, we know in China, that wearing masks in winter time is reasonably commonplace, isn't it?
Yes, even in Thailand, it's still commonplace, yeah.
So fair enough. You were kind of like, when in Rome, these people are a bit nervous, I'll wear the mask. Fair enough, yeah. Jason. Before I move on, mate, I really hope your mum will be okay. How is she at the moment? I mean, is she alert, and is she up and about, and is she getting around about the place at the moment? Is she?
It's not going there to herself. She's like 50% of what she used to be, like, basically.
Let's hope she improves, Jason.
And me.
Listen, thanks for calling, buddy. What are your plans then? Are you going to stick around the West Midlands to look after mum, or do you hope to get back to Thailand?
Yeah, I've got to stick around and look after her, but, I mean, it's to give me... Because while the COVID was on, at the start of the COVID, my business was on the way up. But 6 to 7 months into the COVID, my business just took a nosedive, so... Maybe it's given me the opportunity to build some more cash up and invest in the business and get it back up and running again.
Well, the very best of luck with it. I think your mum is lucky to have you, Jason. I'm sure she's glad you're there, mate. And listen, the very best of luck to your mum, and I hope she will make a recovery and she'll get back to herself.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you.
Not at all, Jason. Lovely to speak to you, Jason, in the West Midlands, who has spent some years, I think he said 7 years, didn't he, in Thailand. The time is 25 minutes to the top of the hour. It's Tuesday's programme. It's me, the BBG, with you till 7 o'clock. Don't forget, please, I've mentioned already, but you won't want to miss Dr. Jesse Keener tomorrow evening. I'll also have Michael Rivero on the programme. Michael and I suppose, will be taking a more in-depth look at United States news, or news from the United States of America. It'll be a pretty busy program tomorrow. Here are the contact details, even though they are posted on the website richieallen.co.uk, where it says comment live.
It's your call. Skype, Chat with Richie. Or call 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from overseas, it's plus 44 161 818 2018. Talk to Richie now.
Welcome back. Back to the telephones then, caller. You are very welcome. Who am I speaking with?
Hiya, Richie. It's Shane.
How you doing, Shane? Lovely to hear from you, pal. Where are you calling from?
Near Doncaster, South Yorkshire.
Not too far away from me. Shane, you're welcome. What would you like to say?
Well, I could cover loads, but I would cover the, find a tribe. After I finished on this call and you finish the show, I'm going to a meeting, which I've been having meetings now since house arrest, lockdown. I basically said, right, I'm meeting people. And I was sat in rooms with microbiologists from Sheffield University, and they're all calling bullshit.
Is that right? Very interesting.
Yeah. And yeah, we got a room, we used mental health, and we just met up every week.
Hang on a second, so you got a room under the guise that you were meeting to talk about mental well-being.
Mental health,
lovely. And you were able to get microbiologists and people. Now, when you say microbiologists called bullshit, give me a bit more detail on that. Exactly?
She's a senior lecturer at Alam University. And she can't see the patterns that they're trying to say the data's happening. But like you, I don't say there's nothing out there, because like you, I was really bad in 2019 with something that I cannot explain.
Yeah.
Cannot explain it. I'll put it this way. My wife has to explain 3 days of it because I've got no memory of it. That's how my temperature went.
You were wiped out, were you, for the 3 days?
Oh, we're wiped out. And we've had it again this Christmas, like yourself. I started with... almost bordering on flu, you know, where it starts aching your bones. However, your wife what laid out.
And are you still a bit rough now? Because the reason
I'm good.
Because
the weird thing about 2000. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to. The reason I asked you, are you okay now? Because my legs have gone. I've attempted to run again. I'm a daily runner, and my legs are absolutely gone. I'm kind of concerned about it. I can't run, I can't move. I'm feeling better and I'm happy in myself, but the legs are gone. I'm hoping that in the next couple of days they'll come back, but I can't go more than a few metres. So I was just wondering. So yeah, this was a particularly nasty dose, but I have to say, nothing like Christmas 2019, early 2020.
That was weird.
Anyway, go ahead, Shane.
I'd like to throw in that something happened to me in 2020 after doctors basically closed all the surgeries. I got a minor eye infection called keratitis. Easy fix. Phone my doctors, send me to doctors for eye drops. They use these for 4 weeks. Phone up again. I said, it's getting worse. He said, do it again for another 4 weeks. Anyway, I said to myself, I'm going to have to go to A&E. I didn't want to. I went on board with all that stuff, but I know what we're going off in A&E, but I had to present myself. Basically, keratitis is like having spots in your eyes. So it's basically rubbing away at your eye. Yeah?
So you said that sounds kind of serious, but it's something they should be able to deal with pretty quickly, right?
Yes, it's a really easy fix.
Right.
However, it wasn't fixed. Ended up getting under the consultant. It sorted out the keratitis, but because it was left that long, it had eroded my cornea away. So literally 12 months later, I'm way back into work. I had to change my jobs because of the eye condition. I used to be an engineer, and then I couldn't be anywhere near welding and anything like that because of archaea. Anyway, long story short, I picked up a bacterial disease called Pseudomonas keratitis. Now, it's to you, you wake up in the morning, you got an itch, splash your eye, gone. Because I had no cornea, and this is my consultant's word, after a week, he says, your eyeball's melting away. It literally melted out my head.
Holy Jesus.
And my wife is a very clever woman. She's actually works in the funeral industry, but she's independent, so I can't talk about anything. But everything that's being said is true. The what's going on in funeral care industries. I've wrote it on, like I say, she's very smart. And she knew from day one that something's going off, and she started cataloguing it. I've literally got a journal cataloguing everything. Jackie Devoy's actually had a read of it.
She saw firsthand what was going on.
Yeah, I've sent Jackie Devoy my journal to read, and it makes grown men and women cry when they read it. And there's graphic pictures as well, so if you'd like to have a look at it, I can forward you that. It's not a massive read, it's not going to take you hours, but you will Yeah.
And your missus has got to maintain anonymity, doesn't she? She can't go.
Yes, because she's not independent, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I get it.
My consultant, an amazing consultant. It's a really complicated story. I went into Guardian Angels, but what happened to me was I was going from Doncaster to Birmingham in an ambulance because I couldn't find a surgeon. Then I was going from Doncaster to Sheffield in an ambulance. And then literally half an hour later, one of the top three consultants in the country was in the hospital. And the next day, I ended up walking 300-400 yards to the hospital where I was born to get my eye eviscerated, which is a technical term for having your eye taken out.
And this ophthalmologist just happened to be working in the hospital this day.
Just happened to be there from Birmingham.
Amazing.
He was doing a visit, some lecture with other ophthalmologists and junior doctors that I don't know, but he was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I went from going to Birmingham to literally walking 300-400 yards to my local hospital and walking back home. Well, I didn't walk back home. It got put me into DRI for pain management. However, the pain I was in before was nothing after I got eviscerated. In fact, a nurse came and said to me, says, we need to ask you this. Are you taking cocaine? Because I weren't asking for any opium or any painkillers because I was fine.
Oh, right. I get you. Yeah. This guy's pain tolerance is pretty, it's pretty much better than we would ordinarily expect. So he must be on the Charlie. So hang on a second now. So this developed into pseudonitis. I think you said keratitis, right?
Keratitis, yeah.
And just in case I've misunderstood what you've been telling me, so you are a glaring example of the damage done to people when the National Health Service became a COVID service.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, my consultant said this shouldn't have happened.
And you're one of God knows how many, Shane.
Oh, I shudder to think, mate. I mean, the society link. I mean, I've spoke to barristers to get a claim in, and they're all going, oh, well, we're not going to get anywhere because of COVID. I said, COVID isn't an excuse. So this doctor could have asked for pictures.
Stay with this. So you've done what I would have done, and that is look into making a claim. It's not always about the money, of course. It's about making sure it doesn't bloody happen again. And they're saying they don't fancy your chances.
I've had free term in hand. They're not going to take it on. So I've said to Jackie Devoy, here you go, have it.
Just in case our listeners don't remember, some of them, of course, will remember, Jackie Devoy is an old friend of mine from TPV in London. Yeah. She's a journalist who's got her byline's been in the Mail.
Yeah.
Lovely lady. The Telegraph, the Times, everywhere. She's a proper old school writer. Wow. I'm fascinated by everything you've said and the fact that your missus has seen firsthand what happened to people in care homes.
Yeah. I would point out that I am having my own little reward for everything I went through. I'm having my own bespoke fake eye made.
You're having a fake eye made?
Well, I've got two already. I'm having this one special. Do you want to know what it is?
When you say bespoke, I'm fascinated. What's it going to be?
The 1992 Leeds United badge. Because it looks like an Irish, doesn't it?
That was my, as a Manchester United fan since birth, basically. That summer of 92, after United Manchester.
Well, you
United.
Got Cantona after that, didn't you?
that's right. We United fans thought because we felt we blew it, but Leeds won it. We felt that summer we're never going to win it. That was one miserable summer. That, but not for you, obviously, Shane. Not for you.
Think about how miserable summers we've had after 97, but we stuck with it.
Yeah.
In the season to get out and the Sos, my nephew.
That was a good Leeds team, that. Strachan, Lee Chapman, Cantona, of course, David Batty, terrific players. Jace, great players.
Oh, Batty,
yeah.
What a legend. He didn't roll around on floor that.
Hey, listen, we can't talk about football. I've got more calls to take. More calls to take. Thanks for sharing that, Shane. And I'm glad you're okay,
Jackie,
buddy.
If you want the journal, Jackie Devoy's got it.
I'll get in touch with Jackie.
It's all digital.
Look after yourself and the best.
Keep up with what you're doing, mate.
Thanks, Shane.
I've been listening to you for years.
Thanks, buddy. And the best to your missus, too. I really appreciate that. Shane on the line from Yorkshire, from near Doncaster, I do believe he said. The time is, what time is it now? It's quarter to the top of the hour. The last two phone-ins we did, we had almost exclusively women, remember? There's not been, are there any women here today? I don't think so. It's back to the, I'm going to try and take two, maybe three more calls back to the telephone lines. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Richie. It's Charlotte from Burnley.
Hello, Charlotte from Burnley. How are you? This is Charlotte Binns. Let me introduce you properly. This is Charlotte Binns from Burnley, who has been getting up to some very interesting things in the last few months, like putting on comedy shows in Burnley, pretty much where you live, but also in London, right?
Yeah, it was a backyard comedy club in Bethnal Green, one of the only comedy clubs that allow awake comedians, if you will.
Awake comedians. So you've had people like Dick Dellingpole, you've had Abby Roberts there, you've had James Dellingpole himself. There are others that you're going to name now. I've been watching some of this online, and it's...
did you watch it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, it's hilariously funny, and it's a brilliant initiative. Really good.
Oh, yeah, you were missing. In fact, I've got something lined up for you, but we can take that off the air. You've had one of the comedians on before, Tanya Edwards. I think you had her on when it was the height of the lockdown, and she was saying about her agent letting her go, and she'd been doing a bit of the...
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Online blog about the madness of it all. And, yes, essentially, they... can't go to like your regular Jonglers or Comedy Store type thing anymore. They've been blacklisted. And that particular club in Bethnal Green is owned by Lee Hurst.
Yeah, Lee, of course, who was on They Think It's All Over for many years.
Yeah, as a panellist.
Yeah, very funny guy, Lee. Yeah. Can I ask you this? Look, you're obviously somebody who loves comedy, and you're from what I can see on Twitter when I'm on there, you're pretty funny yourself, some of the stuff you put out there. What I can't understand, I still don't get this, the arbitrary nature of the response to COVID, like all the ridiculous regulations, and you can only meet three people on a Friday, and you all this nonsense, right? You've got to socially distance. That was manna from heaven for comedians, but comedians, not the ones you are working with yourself, but largely, yeah, Charlotte, comedians were missing in action. They never took
exactly
it on. Why is that, do you think?
Well, that is a great question. I mean, the obvious answer to that is they don't want to be cancelled, and they want the gigs. They could perhaps have seen what was going on around them with the outspoken people. I mean, look, you've got Frankie Boyle, who's had some sort of mind transplant over the last few years, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And even the likes of him, who you'd have expected to go to town. Jimmy Carr, look at Jimmy Carr. He was mocking anti-vaxxers and whatnot, yeah, in one of his shows, wasn't he? And, you've got to search for these people. Otherwise, you're stuck with people like Nish Kumar and unfunny people like Kate Smurfway, who's allegedly a comedian.
Yeah. I interviewed that lady many years ago about abortion. That's when I was based on radio in Spain. It's funny you mention these people, like you mentioned Boyle, you mentioned Jimmy Carr, I'd throw Kevin Bridges in there. People who have had the capacity to be very funny over the years, and yet they had nothing to say on this. But isn't it, it's amazing we're talking today. There must be some synchronicity here, because I've been lamenting recently with my small circle of friends that the UK television, it seems to be, we have a series of panel shows now on UK telly, on the BBC and on Sky, and it seems to be stocked, these panel shows, with the same boring as arseholes comedians. Ramesh Ranganathan is not a funny man. He is painfully unfunny, and his mates, the people that he pals around with, it's the same people, Charlotte.
They're not funny.
No.
I mean, so get back to Kate Smurfway, if anyone who doesn't know who she is, famously went on This Morning and showed how she doesn't shave her armpits.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are activist comedians, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
And this is where the lines have been blurred almost. It's the same. I don't identify with it. If that's humour, and that was humour that we maybe even used to laugh at a few years ago, like Mock the Week, I used to be able to sit and watch that and laugh.
And laugh at it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, is it me who's moved on? Or has it always been like that? I don't know.
No, I'm naive, right? Because I expect it. Again, and I should know better than this, but I obviously didn't. But I expected in March 2020 that Paul Merton on Have I Got News For You would tear people like Matt Hancock and Chris Whitty and Jonathan Van Tam, the most ridiculous human being on planet Earth, that you would have torn these idiots to, you know, especially when they were making these football analogies. Remember Van Tam? Well, at the moment it's like half time and we're like 1-0 down to the virus. This is manna from heaven to a good comic. Take him to the cleaners. And nobody did, except, you know, some of the people that you're working with. And of course, they paid the price for it because they struggle to get arrested now, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, it was just humorous. The whole thing was just laughable. I mean, the thing is as well, though, I don't, you know, you are in a different position to me because I know that you put things like Sky News on just to see what they're saying for your show, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't watch it. I mean, I could say you might have, you know, Have I Got News For You, where they're mocking the Scotch egg thing. I don't know. Can't watch it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. When they were determining, when these guys, these sage guys and women as well, were coming up with what was acceptable, what constituted a lunch, what, you know, justified you to be in a pub and not wearing a mask. I was screaming at this stuff, thinking I'd love to be at the Palladium tonight. You know, I'm not a stand-up comedian, but I can do something with this material, you know, and I'm not a stand-up comic. And they didn't touch it. It's
well, the thing is, I mean, even for some reason, the name Jason Manford springs to mind. I mean, humour's not everyone's cup of tea, but like, I saw him like berating people on Twitter 2 years ago, and were they that scared of the virus or whatever that they didn't see the funny side? Like, it just beggars belief. I don't know what the answer to it is, and whether they're all going to come round.
Yeah, this is it. And you know, you're leaving a bit of room, I think, and it's fair to leave a bit of room, that maybe the majority of these people, because they're in the belly of the beast, maybe, you know, a lot of them genuinely believed that COVID was deadly. Maybe they did. And if they did, well then, you know, I'll give them a pass for that. But at this stage now, 2.5 years later, they must know now that they were hoodwinked. And if they do, you know, there's still time for some of these big name comics to take this apart, because it would be very bloody helpful now if they did, you know, at this moment in time.
Can you think of anyone that would and that hasn't spoken out?
No, no.
No, I can't. You've got a couple in America, haven't you? Tim Dillon, he's funny.
Yeah.
A few of them on YouTube and stuff, but mainstream, you're not going to get it. You know, you've got all these big gigs to look forward to. And unless some sort of huge, you know, revelation comes out in the mainstream, then they're not going to touch it.
No, I'm going to give a plug to your Twitter, not that you need much of a plug for it, but I'll give a mention anyway. You'll find Charlotte on Twitter. It's at Charlotte Emma UK, at Charlotte Emma UK. Or if you just look for Charlotte, the Baroness of Burnley. I don't know who bestowed that title on you, but self-appointed
That's
Baroness.
Do you remember when Tony Blair got his Knight Commander of the Garter title?
Oh,
and
that's
a few
right.
People took the mic on Twitter and put Dame or Sir in front of the name. So yeah, it just kind of lingered, I think. Maybe that
it's kind of stuck. So are you planning for 2023? Are you planning some more events then north and south where people can go and see comics who have got the balls to take stuff on? And if you are planning, where do people go to find out about it? Should they just go to your Twitter or should they go to their website?
Well, yeah, it's funny you should say that. So yeah, there's lots of ideas planned in 2023. Got some great contacts who are doing festivals and all this kind of thing for our kind of people, if you will. But 27th to the 29th of January in Kegworth, Derbyshire, there's a Comcast Live, so it's going to be comedy, stand-up, and a whole host of podcasters, including Gareth and Rich from Iconic. They're going to be doing the WTAS
Lovely.
Podcast. There's going to be people like David Vance, I was going to send you a little message to see if you want to come along, but let me do that anyway. We'll talk.
Drop me a message. Yeah, I'm a recluse, to be honest, Charlotte, most of the time. But drop me a message, definitely. Yeah, it was something I wanted to do myself. I planned in 2019 a theatre show, which was an audiovisual thing, which I was going to do in 2020, and of course that all collapsed then because of everything. I am fascinated by what you're doing and definitely want to promote it. There's no doubt about that. Hey, listen, give us those details again, will you? Because I'm just about to run out of time. I've got to get out of here. I've only got 3 minutes left.
So it's www.comedypodcastlive.com. You'll be able to see everyone who's on, full weekend of it. The guys at Pushback AV who've done a lot of audiovisual things for like protests and other things like that. They're great guys. They've put this on for them. Helping them out, and I hope to see everyone there.
Brilliant. ComedyPodcastLive.com. That's the website. And if you want to follow Charlotte on Twitter, it's at Charlotte Emma UK. Great to hear from you. I'm glad you got through.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lovely to speak to you.
You too, Charlotte. Bye for now. Right, that's it, folks. Thanks to everybody who called in and got through. To those of you who didn't, I apologise. I'll be doing one of these pretty much every week from now on, right? And I am keeping an eye on the people who didn't get through, and I'll put you on next time we do one of these. So thank you. That's it for me. Tomorrow, Michael Rivero and Dr. Jesse Keener on The Richie Allen Show. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, whatever you happen to be doing, and whomever you are doing it with. Closing out with National Express from The Divine Comedy. Until mañana. It's hasta mañana. Bye.